Whereas the infertility and salinity of Australia's soils are not well known outside of Australia among the lay public today, Australia's water problems are obvious and familiar, such that desert is the first association of most people overseas to mention of the Australian environment. That reputation is justified. Much of Australia's area remains useless today for any form of agriculture or pastoralism. In those areas where food production is possible, the usual pattern is that rainfall is higher near the coast than inland, so that as one proceeds inland, one first encounters farmland for growing crops, plus half of Australia's cattle maintained at high stocking rates. Further inland, sheep stations. Still further inland, cattle stations, the other half of Australia's cattle maintained at very low stocking rates. And finally, still further inland, the desert. A more subtle problem about Australia's rainfall than its low average values is its unpredictability. In many parts of the world supporting agriculture, the season in which rain falls is predictable from year to year. Major droughts are infrequent, and a farmer can go to the effort and expense of plowing and planting each year with the expectation that there will be enough rain for that crop to mature. Over most of Australia, however, rainfall depends upon the so-called ENSO, the El Niño Southern Oscillation, which means that rain is unpredictable from year to year within a decade, and is even more unpredictable from decade to decade. In many areas of Australia, the first farmers and herders had the misfortune to arrive during a string of wet years. Hence, they were deceived into misjudging the Australian climate, and they commenced raising crops or sheep in the expectation that the favorable conditions greeting their eyes were the norm. In fact, in most of Australia's farmlands, the rainfall is sufficient to raise crops to maturity in only a fraction of all years. That contributes to making Australian agriculture expensive and uneconomic. The farmer goes to the expense of plowing and sowing, and then in half or more of years, there is no resulting crop. An additional unfortunate consequence is that when the farmer plows under whatever cover of weeds has sprung up since the last harvest, bare soil becomes exposed. If the crops that the farmer then sows do not mature, the soil is left bare and thus exposed to erosion. The principal exception to Australia's ENSO-driven pattern of unpredictable rain is the wheat belt of its southwest, where, at least until recently, the winter rains came reliably, and a farmer could count on a successful wheat crop almost every year. That reliability propelled wheat within recent decades to overtake wool and meat as Australia's most valuable agricultural export. But global climate change has been undermining the predictable winter rains. They have declined dramatically since 1973, while increasingly frequent summer rains there fall on harvested bare ground and cause increased salinization. Australian historians speak of the tyranny of distance as an important factor in Australia's development. That expression refers to the long overseas ship journeys, making transport costs for Australian exports higher than for exports from the New World to Europe, so that only products with low bulk and high value could be exported economically from Australia. Originally, in the 19th century, minerals and wool were the main such exports. Today, Australia's principal exports remain low-bulk, high-value items, including steel, minerals, wool, and wheat. Increasingly, within the last few decades, wine and macadamia nuts as well, and also some specialty crops aimed at niche markets for which some consumers are willing to pay a premium, such as durum wheat and other special wheat varieties, and wheat and beef raised without pesticides or other chemicals. But there is an additional tyranny of distance, one within Australia itself. Australia's productive or settled areas are few and scattered. The country has a population only 1/14 that of the U.S., scattered over an area equal to that of the U.S.'s lower 48 states. The resulting high costs of transportation within Australia make it expensive to sustain a first-world civilization there. For example, the Australian government pays for telephone connection to the national phone grid for any Australian home or business at any location within Australia, even for outback stations hundreds of miles from the nearest station. Today, Australia is the most urbanized country in the world, with 58% of its population concentrated in just five large cities. Among those five, Perth is the world's most isolated large city, lying further than any other from the next large city, Adelaide, 1,300 miles to the east. It is no accident that two of Australia's largest companies, its national airline Qantas and its telecommunications company Telstra, are based on bridging those distances. Australia's internal tyranny of distance, in combination with its droughts, is also responsible for the fact that banks and other businesses are closing their branches in Australia's isolated towns, because those branches have become uneconomic. Doctors are leaving those towns for the same reason. As a result, Australia is increasingly without medium-sized towns. Instead, most Australians today either live in a few large cities with all the amenities of the modern first world, or in smaller villages, or else outback stations without banks, doctors, or other amenities. Australia's small villages of a few hundred people can survive a five-year drought, such as arises often in Australia's unpredictable climate, because the village has so little economic activity anyway. Big cities can also survive a five-year drought because they integrate the economy over a huge catchment area. But a five-year drought tends to wipe out medium-sized towns, whose existence depends on their ability to provide enough business branches and services to compete with more distant cities, but which aren't big enough to integrate over a huge catchment. Increasingly, most Australians don't depend on or really live in the Australian environment. They live instead in those five big cities, which are connected to the outside world rather than to the Australian landscape.